Hello all sentient beings and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk about all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we review Transformers Ghostbusters, Issue 3. We get a look at the Japanese covers for IDW's More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise, and AllSpark Animations has a new senior vice president. Today is Friday, August 16th, 2019, and this is episode 142 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that understands it's weird for humans to ride around inside of Transformers. So we just don't talk about it. I'm your host Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team. Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hey, and the real question is, did Kit also feel weird when Michael was riding in him?
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Hey, I can't think of a snappy... sentient car right now. Let's talk Transformers, though.
All right. We'll have to wait for the next IDW crossover with Knight Rider. I'm sure that's in the works.
It needs to be in the works. Come on, we need the Hoff in our Transformers.
And I have to be set in Germany. All right. As always, we start off by thanking our Donatrions, those awesome people who give us money on Patreon and PayPal. Thank you so much for continuing to contribute to the show. It really helps us out. If you want to support the show, you can go to transmissionspodcast.com/support. And there are all the links for supporting us on Patreon and PayPal. You can also support us by buying merchandise from our T Public store, which is at transmissionspodcast.com/shop. You've got lots of t-shirt designs there, and these were show off your allegiance to Transmissions, and you can show off whether you're a good guy or a bad guy with those special symbols designed by Daryl and made pretty by K-Girl, our awesome graphic artist friend. And she has her own store at tpublic.com/user/superstarK. So check those out. All right, well, let's jump right in and talk about some comics news. All right, we mentioned, I think it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned Jim Sorensen's new Transformers book called Transformers: A Visual History. It's an art book. And we've got some cover images for both the limited and limited edition and regular covers. So you can pre-order these on Amazon, and they look really cool. They do have the movie-verse Megatron and Optimus Prime there, so that's a little disappointing for me. But
it's the history.
Well, it looks like the $49 one has just Optimus, and the $99 has an lenticular one that has both. It also has five art prints.
But no, yeah, this they've got, and we do have some sample pages on the inside. So we've got stuff from G1, stuff from the comics. Stuff from the movies, stuff from the video games, too. So lots of cool stuff.
Yeah. And Charles, you know what they say. Should not judge a book by its cover. So
that is true.
It's very wise, Jeremy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because that was literally what we're doing.
Thank you for correcting me, Jeremy. That is important. You should judge a book by the content of its character, right?
Exactly.
All right. Next, we've got more pages of the Takara Tomy Generation Selects Seacons webcomic. So this is not translated yet, but you can see the continuing story featuring the new Seacons toys. Looks like there's a Matrix involved there with Optimus Prime. Some stuff going on. It's very pretty, very colorful, very action-y, and they do form Piranicon at the end. So I'm sure we'll get a translation soon so we can tell what's going on. Next, we've got the retailer incentive cover for Transformers number 11 from IDW. And this is art by Guido Guidi, which is always one of our favorite artists. So we wish he did more interiors than he does. But yeah, so this one features Quake, who we haven't seen in a while. Quake was set up to be one of the kind of dangerous big bads in the series, but we haven't seen what he's been up to. So maybe in Transformers 11, we'll get some more info on Quake, who is apparently a very bad guy.
That's an awesome image.
It is. It is, definitely. And lastly, we've got some images for the upcoming IDW More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise Japanese edition books. So we've got the covers for these volumes, and this is a really awesome image. It's a combined cover, so each book features characters from More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise, but then the cover is a you know, when the two images are put side by side, it forms one large image. It's really, really detailed. Like, really, it shows the artist was really paying attention to what's going on in this in the story. This is a really cool image. I really like how they featured all the characters in that first season of More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise. You've got Bumblebee and Rodimus prominent there. You've got Optimus Prime kind of ghostly in the background because he, you know, Optimus Prime was not very prominent at the beginning except for the first issue. And then the one really nice detail I like at the bottom is you've got Rewind and Swindle, where Rewind is buying the secret video discs from Swindle. That happened in the first issue of More Than Meets the Eye, and it's nice because Swindle stays in Robots in Disguise and Rewind goes to More Than Meets the Eye. So it's just nice, real nice image there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like so much chaos, but it's all referencing something in the books.
We've also got some of the variant covers for both books that have a little bit more, I would say, manga influence on those covers there. I do not read Japanese, so these books would not be useful for me since I already have them in English. But for our Japanese fellow Transformers fans who have not gotten a chance to dig into these stories, I hope you enjoy them and I hope you're able to pick them up. All right, well, that's all the comics news, so let's move on to our review. And this week we are reviewing Transformers Ghostbusters number 3, Ghosts of Cybertron Part 3. Written by Eric Burnham, art by Dan Schoening, colors by Luis Antonio Delgado, letters by Tom B. Long, assistant editor Megan Brown, and editors David Marriott and Tom Waltz. We've got three covers for this issue. So the first one is the part of that combined cover. And this part features Optimus Prime in his Ghostbusters paint job, along with Blitzwing and looks like Bombshell and Sunstreaker in car mode jumping there. And then we've got one of the Ghostbusters. I can't really tell which one it is down at the bottom. But yeah, I mean, it's a nice image, but it really works with the whole combined, all five covers combined. So by itself, it's part of a whole rather than a single image by itself. That's cover A by Dan Schoening and colors by Luis Antonio Delgado. Cover B, with art by Nick Roche and colors by Josh Burcham, features Ectotron and the four Ghostbusters slinging their proton packs and shooting things. And then the retailer incentive cover is art by Philip Murphy, where Slimer is sliming Ectotron and Peter Venkman. And that has a distinct real Ghostbusters animation feel for the Ghostbusters characters there. So that's nice. Daryl, which cover are you picking here?
Well, if you listen to the toy show earlier in the week and you watch Trip to the Stores, you'll notice that I have bought cover A and cover B of this collection. I'm really into the whole five-part combining cover here. I think I like that one probably the best. Although I don't think there's a bad one in the group here. They all look really good.
Cool. Jeremy, which cover are you picking?
I agree. They're all good this week. I'm giving a nod to the cover A because it actually has a transformation on the cover. Like, get to see Blitzwing go through the different modes. I think they do that well.
Nice. I think for me, I will give it to the retailer incentive cover just because I like the real Ghostbusters cartoon. I like those designs. And also Slimer. I got a soft spot for Slimer, mm-hmm. and having him slime Ectotron there. That's always fun. But definitely none of these covers are bad. These are all great covers.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's get into the story. The Ghostbusters, Ectronimus Diamatron, and Starscream's Ghost return to the Firehouse headquarters after the events of last issue. Ectronimus is introduced to the Ghostbusters' assistant, Janine Melnitz, and she's less than impressed. Ectronimus becomes increasingly frustrated that no one can get his easily pronounceable 8-syllable name right, and Peter Venkman points out that no one else has a name with more than 5 syllables. As a compromise, Janine suggests he shorten it and go by just Ectotron to make it easy on everyone. Ectotron reluctantly agrees. Meanwhile, Peter follows Starscream's Ghost up to the second level for a little chat. Peter, being a con man himself, recognizes a kindred spirit in Starscream. He knows Starscream isn't telling them the whole story and offers him the chance to come clean. Starscream, using his ghost powers to shrink down to human size, refuses to play nice with a lowly human and instead resorts to threats. But Peter isn't intimidated and flicks a hidden switch, activating a ghost trap and putting Starscream in a timeout to think about his situation. Downstairs, Ray has finished helping Ectotron fix his communicator so he can contact the Ark, currently in orbit on the dark side of the moon, and reach Optimus Prime, which he does. But just their luck, Grimlock is on comm duty right now and answers the call. Grimlock is not the most agreeable bot to talk to, but luckily Optimus Prime overhears Ectotron on the communicator and takes the call. Ectotron explains the whole situation with the Ghostbusters and Starscream, and this is enough to convince Prime he needs to see things for himself. Wheeljack doesn't think it's a good idea, and he's skeptical about all this ghost stuff. But Prime is adamant that he needs to support Ectotron despite Wheeljack's misgivings. Optimus prepares a shuttle to transport from the Ark to Earth. Back in New York, the Ghostbusters get another call, and it's bustin' time. The guys stare at Ectotron expectantly. Ectotron realizes he's got to be their ride and transforms back into Ecto-1. He doesn't want to leave before Optimus Prime arrives, but Peter assures him they'll be back in no time, and they're off, sirens blazing. They reach the warehouse in Brooklyn where the ghost sighting was reported. Egon picks up readings similar to the Kremzeek electrical sprite they faced earlier. This could be a problem, since their regular ghost traps couldn't handle the electrical discharge. Ectotron startles the Ghostbusters by quickly transforming to robot mode and asking if he can help. Winston suggests he and Peter go inside to flush out the ghost while Ray, Egon, and Ectotron get the trap ready. The plan is set and they get to work. Winston and Peter search through the warehouse, but it's deserted. No ghost anywhere. Then Peter gets a bright idea. Maybe if this ghost is attracted to electricity, it'll come out if they kill the power in the circuit breaker. Peter flips a switch, and there's a massive burst of electricity. Another Kremzeek is here, and Peter made it very mad. It's also grown fat, feeding off the electricity in the building, and now it's riled up. Outside, Ectotron, Ray, and Egon have finished fixing the trap and are waiting for the signal. Peter and Winston come running out, the Kremzeek hot on their heels. They'll need all 4 proton packs to keep this spook contained. Together, all 4 Ghostbusters blast the giant Kremzeek, but it only seems to be getting stronger. It's still feeding off of the power grid from a nearby electrical utility pole. So Ectotron acts fast and smashes the pole, cutting off Kremzeek's power source. Taking the chance, Ray throws out the modified ghost trap and hits the switch. The Kremzeek is safely contained and the job is done. The Ghostbusters and Ectotron return home to find Optimus Prime waiting for them. Optimus has assumed the form of a familiar tractor trailer, but unfortunately had a run-in with some local graffiti artists while hiding in truck form. But there'll be time to clean up later. Right now, he'd like to talk to Starscream. Peter grabs the ghost trap he stuck Starscream in and opens it up to find Starscream gone. To be continued. So that is Transformers Ghostbusters number 3. This is definitely more a Ghostbusters book. So it's nice to see them go out and bust a ghost. And I like the added wrinkle of making Kremzeek their primary antagonist here, like we saw that in the last issue, and now in this issue we've got another Kremzeek they've got to take down. So that's a nice. I wasn't anticipating using Kremzeek as kind of the bridge between the Ghostbusters and the Transformers, so that's interesting. Of course, being a Transformers fan, I'd always like to see more Transformers, particularly more Decepticons. I know the Decepticons are at this point all dead or all ghosts somewhere. But I'd like to see what they're getting up to. But overall, you know, I'm happy with how the series is going. This is definitely one of the better Transformers crossovers we've seen. It's just weird to see how many different Transformers crossovers we've been getting in the last few years. I remember when we started this show, that's something we'd ask, interview some of the comic artists we were talking to, like, what would you like to do with a Transformers crossover? And it seems like now we've been getting so many of them. It's like all our dreams are coming true. We'll get a crossover with like every 80s property we can think of.
Like we mentioned earlier, so, we need Knight Rider. We also need
Knight Rider. So, Jeremy, what did you think of this issue?
I liked it. Like you said, it's primarily Ghostbusters, but it's also, you know, the middle of a crossover. You're waiting for Optimus Prime to get there, and they aren't just going to sit around and wait. They're, you know, they get calls. One thing that confused me, if you look behind Janine's desk, you see the painting from Ghostbusters 2 with Viggo the Carpathian. Is that right? Is Carpathian?
Yep.
And I was like, at the end of Ghostbusters 2, didn't that change back like to like a painting of Peter and stuff? And apparently, I looked this up because it was bugging me and I forgot until you were going through this. Apparently, in Ghostbusters, a video game, which seems to be canon, it reverted back to the other, like the original look, and they kept it in the firehouse near Janine's desk. So that is a nice piece of continuity here in the book, putting it there for the Ghostbuster fans that are aware of it, and for those of us that aren't really as steeped in the Ghostbusters lore, it confused me enough to look it up, and I really appreciate little things like that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I guess another question is, like, what time frame are we with the Ghostbusters current? Like, is this just, like, 10 years after, like, 1984? Or, like, I wonder, like, where we are. Are we in the mid-90s? I mean, there's one part where Peter mentions, like, he needs to find his phone, which apparently means they're at the point where they had cell phones. So
yeah, I'm not sure, like, what the time frame is here. Another thing I really thought was neat, when Prime does get there, you see a big parking lot with a bunch of vehicles. I clearly see familiar vehicle modes. I would imagine when the other Autobots come, they'll show up there. And when a couple of particular Decepticons come, they might take some of these modes as well. Mm-hmm. Like I saw like a car looks like Wheeljack. Another car might be Sunstreaker.
Oh, my goodness, Jeremy.
What?
Or drag strip?
It's the Stunicons. You're looking at the Stunicons. All five of them are there.
Well, okay, the white one looks like Wheeljack. That's what made That's the first one I saw. Okay, fine. Whatever.
Fine. And then Motor Master is over there in the corner.
Okay. Yep. Whatever. Well, regardless, if we see the Stunicons in the series later on, they set it up here, and that's kind of neat. And then I like how Optimus gets graffitied. That was fun. It's New York in the 80s or 80s, early 90s, probably somewhere around there.
Yeah. And there's the opportunity to give him a new paint job, eh? Eh?
Yeah.
When in Rome.
Did the two women that spray paint, kind of their hairstyles kind of remind me of Bebop and Rocksteady before they got, you know, transformed?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's all in New York. But anyway, it's fun. I continue to really enjoy this crossover. Art's great. Story's fun. So we need more of this.
All right. Daryl, what did you think?
I thought it was really fun. I've said it before on the show that Kremzeek is probably the episode, G1 episode Kremzeek is probably my least favorite G1 episode just because I hated Kremzeek as the character. He was so annoying. So him being the villain or like the character that they're all kind of chasing is just, it's just kind of annoying to me, but I can get over it. I'm, that one panel that we're all kind of looking at here that's got the Stunicons in it with when Optimus Prime shows up, the first tractor trailer in that line is the Mask Snake base, Venom or whatever. It's the Venom base in the trailer.
Oh, I see.
See that there?
Oh.
And I don't know if it was done on purpose for coloring-wise, but the tractor trailer, the Optimus Prime kind of mimics, that's the color that the LeBron James one ended up being. So I was like, oh, did they pick that because of that, or is it just the coincidental? But yeah, there's a lot of Easter eggs in that one little panel.
I think that was also the color of the tractor trailer that the Sky Spy first scanned in the first episode of the G1 cartoon.
Oh, possibly. I thought it was red, though. Yeah. I thought the Sky Spy just scanned an exact copy of Optimus.
Well, and the panel below, the angle and stuff is like from the animated movie right before Optimus runs into all those Decepticons.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's a ton of Easter eggs in this series. Right, not just between Ghostbusters and Transformers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff in here. So I'm enjoying it. It's a lot of fun to read. It's the art's fantastic. It's really fun, and the graffiti on him, obviously. You never really get a good look at one of the one graffiti on his left arm. I think it says Destrons, but it's and then there's a phone number 555-1383. I don't know what that's in reference to. It's got to mean something. He's obviously got 84. That we all know what that is. The Ghostbuster symbol, that's obvious. I don't know what DS is. Dan Schoening, maybe?
Could be.
The phone number there is I don't know what that's in reference to. I like it. I'm looking at I'm looking at all these things now. Oh, and on his right arm is Humans Are Wimps.
Yeah. That's from Transformers 23 with the battle chargers.
So there's a lot of good stuff here.
That's a funny Easter egg, but in context, why would a graffiti artist write "Humans are wimps"?
Maybe they are really. Tag?
Maybe they're not humans. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going through every page of this book now because there's just so much stuff that Dan Schoening put in this is just fantastic. It's not something that you're like, oh my God, you've got to read this. It's one of the greatest Transformers books ever written because it's just there's so much here and you can dig deep into it. It's just a fun ride and it's a great little crossover. It's got great art and as you read through the panels, you can hear the voices of the characters. I think we got a tweet or something like that from the writer that said that he envisioned what was it, David Hyde Pierce? As the voice of Ectotron.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic.
Okay.
You know, you give you a voice to put to the character.
I can see that.
And I think it's great. I can hear all the voices. I can hear Janine. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. from watching the movies, it's fun. I'm really liking it.
Yeah, like in addition to that, all the detail that the artist puts in, like, for example, in the panel where you have Wheeljack talking to Optimus Prime, like all the panels where Wheeljack has word balloons, his ears are lit up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the panels where he's not speaking and he's just listening to Optimus Prime, his ears are off.
Hmm.
So that's the colorist put that detail in. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really paying attention. That's mm-hmm.
And also, like, there's a slight implication that they've been to Earth before. Like they mentioned, like in the time since mm-hmm. they first discovered Earth, they've reached a level of civilization. And, you know, the fact that Grimlock appears to have a dinosaur mode and you know, we even get like a slight homage to his origin from the cartoon where Optimus Prime says, "Remember, Wheeljack, I supported some of your crazy ideas." And then he looks at Grimlock
mm-hmm.
and then Grimlock completely oblivious, like, yeah, Grimlock still thinks Wheeljack's crazy. it's really, really nice. Yeah, but I agree. The art and the story are just really, really nice attention to detail, especially these guys doing so much to pay homage to the Transformers when they're primarily Ghostbusters guys. So
mm-hmm.
thank you guys for doing the Transformers justice in your Ghostbusters book. All right. Well, that is our review of Transformers Ghostbusters number 3. And let's move on to some Transformers media news.
All right. In media news this week, we've got a story about a new vice president of AllSpark Animations. This is Nina Scales, and she is formerly of Hasbro Studios. So it looks like they, because AllSpark Animations is what they're putting up in Ireland. Do they built that yet, or they're building it now? I think. Yeah, they're putting all this effort to go over there, and it sounds like they're moving some of their executives over to kind of continue the ship, keep it going on the right path. She will be reporting directly to Stephen Davis, who is the Hasbro CCO and EVP.
Chief Creative Officer and Executive Vice President, maybe?
Sure, sounds good. Very exciting news. Congratulations to Ms. Scales. I'm sure she's very qualified, and she'll do a great job.
It says she's been with Hasbro since 2011, so you know, nice kind of promoting within the company.
Yeah, so this she's replacing a man by the name of Finn Armston, and he was instrumental in developing the distribution of popular shows such as Transformers Prime, Transformers Rescue Bots, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, G.I. Joe Renegades, Transformers Robots in Disguise. So she's got some big shoes to fill, I think, with the Transformers Netflix series and I think
Cyberverse. Yeah,
Cyberverse Rescue Bots Academy, I think, is the new one as well. I think she's on the right track. So again, congratulations, Ms. Scales. I look forward to seeing your work on television. And that's it for media news.
All right, let's move on to convention news.
All right. Well, TF Nation is this weekend. So if you're there, send us feedback and let us know how it went. It's something that we always want to go to, and we just don't have the means. But over here in North America in October, we have TFCon DC, and they have announced that a friend of the show, Casey Collar, has announced he's going to be at TFCon. So that is cool. Casey is a great guy. Check his Twitter for when he opens up any commission opportunities. Garrett, I would very much suggest you get a commission. Does amazing work. And that is all the news we got this week.
All right, well, we will finish up the show with some feedback. And we have a voicemail that was sent in from one of our Donatrions, Kyle Benning. And he's actually listening right now in the chat live. So, Kyle, this is your voicemail that you will get to listen to.
Hey, guys, this is Kyle Benning. I just wanted to call and give you some comics feedback. Yes. Kind of all over the map here as far as how you guys are liking the new series. Some of you really like it, some of you not so much, more Daryl and Yoshi. The comments weren't reiterated so much this time, but in the past, you know, Yoshi's made the comment of, you know, how is this passing through IDW? You know, how do their editors look at this and think this is what people want or think this is a good story? And really, I think the answer for that is, you know, probably part of the whole sales pitch the writer had to make. You know, he has his long-form story arc, how it kind of concludes, a total plot outline. So at that point, once the editors, they see the roadmap to the kind of the final destination of this first 12-issue arc, that makes them a bias source at that point. So, you know, there could be all these hidden Easter eggs, little plot points that we don't think are important when we're reading through it the first time. We're not really seeing that seeded just because it's boring and so much talking. But those could all have bigger payoffs that, hey, look, this kind of mystery, it was really well layered the whole time. And now you know, the last two or three issues, maybe you see that all come to fruition. And so, you know, once you kind of read that whole plot outline, see where that's going, I think that kind of compromises the editors a little bit, that they're unable to look at this story, you know, broken up over 6 months or two, you know, week increments and look at it and go, oh, well, you know, there's really not enough here because they're already seated. They see these key points that don't stick out to us because they know that ties in later. So I think that's really how it's passing kind of their editorial approval is hopefully that means, you know, there's this great revelation waiting at the end. And once we get to that point, it's going to be one of those, oh, I want to go back and reread the 12 issues and there's going to be all these payoffs here and I'm going to get so much more enjoyment. And it's going to be such a more enriching experience the second time through.
Well, thanks for that voicemail, Kyle. That was really nice. Yeah, we're struggling with the book. I know it is taking some time to get going. I think I kind of gave it more than Yoshi did. Yeah, it's I'm hoping for a payoff. I really am. It's just it's one of those things where I really just I'm out, like I've said before, I need some action or something to happen in between all the story. So it doesn't seem like it's always just info dumping on me. I understand that we have to build a universe here of new information. And if you go back to the beginning of the IDW run, back when they first got the license, they were in the same boat. Yeah, the stories weren't great, but there was action intertwined with those stories, right? So they've done it before. Yeah, I give the books a chance. I still buy them all. I'm really hoping for some action. Just a little bit. Intertwine it in there, and I'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree. It probably is how you laid it out, Kyle. But with what Daryl says with the action, the editor's job should be to kind of craft it so each issue has something there that services like all the different balls you have that you're juggling, and that's the problem. It's just like, I think that's why we have the issues out of order, because they were trying to give some action just to kind of keep people from abandoning the book.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about this before, like, and it's, yeah, Quattro mentions it in the chat here. I think the background of being a novelist, where you have really that long form space to tell a story, and you don't really have the demands of having each chapter be a complete story by itself. Like you can make a chapter, you can play around with the structure, play around with what's going on. But in comics, you really need each comic to be able to stand alone by itself in order to keep people interested in reading. And if you don't put a momentous event in each issue, it makes it difficult to sustain interest, I think. I mean, even if you get to the end and when you put all 12 books together in a volume, maybe it's a really awesome story. But if you're reading every 2 weeks or month to month, it seems like a drag. If you pile up all the action near the end. I think we've said this all before, but thanks, Kyle, for your feedback. And I think Kyle's agreeing with us in the chat. So, I think Kyle understands. Mm. All right. Well, and we do continue to, for all the people, I mean, I think we've also said in the past, for all the people who are still enjoying it, keep writing in and keep telling us what you think, how you think the series is going. And we will, we will keep reading and discussing it. All right. Well, that is it for this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
You are doing the comic review, right? I didn't just space on that.
Oh, yes, I am. Sorry.
Okay. I just had this like horrible feeling. I'm like, wait, was this mine?
No, you did it last week, so.
Because I had not prepared a review.
It really helps us out as Daryl drops a toy.
Something had wheels on it and it rolled.
It always is.
I didn't even look at this yet. Hold on.
I crossed out the TF trading card game ones for you already.
Fantastic.
Well, just keep that in mind when we play it.
That is an issue for the editing team,
Mike,
not the live production team.